Broadcasting from the super-secret underground bunker at World Headquarters, this is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Stand by. Accessing primary security protocols. Your access has been approved. Welcome to Level 117.
Welcome, everyone, to this edition of Level 117, our next foray into discussion and analysis of Agent Carter. While we wait for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Mr. Harvey's looking rather confused already.
Headphone issues.
Oh, all right. Well, yes, so Timothy Harvey is here. I'll just start with him. Joining us here in the studio along with Mr. Harvey. Maya Aides.
Good evening.
Is here. Cammy Settles here.
Hello.
Back from wherever she was last week.
Yes. Calypso.
Dan Handley is here.
Hello.
And then dialing in from parts unknown, Marie Lim is with us again.
Hi.
And joining us from Dallas, Ms. Heather French.
Well, Richardson, actually. But yeah, sure. Hi.
Okay. So anyway, so here we go. We have a death ray in Nevada. Did you catch that?
Yes.
I wonder where the death... When are we going to see it? Mm. Is it going to be used?
It's only a verbal checkoff gun, so...
Maybe not.
That's what you want to start with?
What would you like to start with, Miss Lim?
Jarvis being a cutie.
Oh, jeez.
Not in my wheelhouse, I tell you.
I'll tie those two together, though, because last week we made a supposition that we would never see Mrs. Jarvis, that she wasn't real, that she would be like Maris on Frasier. And yet we heard her in a conversation without Jarvis tossing his voice, so... Maybe that's what the death ray will be like. We think we're not going to see it, but we will.
Or it could be in his own head.
Yelling at my TV about that, actually, because you guys said that, one, she doesn't do any cleaning or anything like that, and she tells him, oh, I'll get the dishes. And you guys kept thinking, oh, it's just going to be like, you're never going to see her, when you got backstory and a whole other conversation with her.
Well, no, wait, let's clarify. I never said that she didn't exist. I said she was going to be like Maris in that we would never see her.
And we haven't seen her yet. People were saying that she was like a big fake, though.
We're never going to see. Well, I guess maybe somebody did.
Yes, we did.
Somebody did. I guess somebody suggested that. Okay.
Her voice was just in his head.
And now it's in our head.
Yes.
Yep.
Because I heard it too.
So let's start with Jarvis, because the bulk of the plot tonight deals with Carter trying to figure out whether or not she can trust this man after learning that he got accused of treason.
Yep.
And was dishonorably discharged from...
Not just accused, but charged with.
Charged. That's accused. Well,
but an accusation could be made informally.
That's true.
But the charges were formal. Yeah.
My favorite part about that was... Carter keeps going, I don't need to know, I don't need to know, and then, like, not even, like, 5 minutes later, she's like, okay, wait, no, I need to know. I need your backstory. Just tell me.
Yeah, I like that, too, because she was trying to... I got the feeling that she was trying to convince herself at first that she didn't need to know, but then she was like, no, you know what? I really do.
Well, that's something that you do see a lot of. I mean, I know this isn't the Downton Abbey crowd, but it's the same thing that's happening on there where I want to trust you. And if I trust you, I don't need to know. But in order to really trust you, I need to know what happens so that there's no secrets between us. It's this kind of, you know, polar opposites. Are both need to be true in a way.
The dichotomy that you need both sides to be served so that you can have the one result.
Well, the other part of it is, I'm going to trust you, so I don't need to know, but I need to know in order to trust you.
Right.
You know, it's that chicken and egg thing where
it is what you just said.
It is, but you know.
But Jason has to
worth,
say it.
It's worth saying twice.
Now we believe it because Jason said it.
That's right.
Oh, that
See,
sounds like a
that's what's
topic.
That's what's going to happen. The rest of the season, instead of me coming up with my theory, I'm just going to repeat what other people say in order to validate
and
what you say.
And make it your own.
Exactly.
You mean what the other women say.
Yeah.
Well, then anybody. I'm not going to discriminate. anybody says something, I'll repeat it, and that makes it true.
Except for me.
And that makes it is.
Except for Dan. See?
And for Tim. Wait a second. That is all the women. Okay.
Right.
Tim's okay, not saying anything right now.
So the
I'm just sitting back and listening to you people.
He is a wise man, I tell you.
He knows when to step out, yes.
Something that bothers me, and I guess we could get into this a little bit on the backside of the break, but something bothers me about Chief Dooley. We'll get into that when we get into analysis part. Let's talk plot. Who wants to actually go through what happened in the episode tonight? Cammy usually does that, but... Where does anybody want to take that on?
I already said Jarvis was a cutie. That's like all you
that's
need.
That's the
to
whole
know.
Plot.
That's the salient
part.
Point of the Jarvis hour, right?
That's all they established tonight.
All right. Okay. I'm trying to remember if I can think back.
We start out at the boarding house.
At the boarding house, and then there's the
which gives Agent Carter the idea that.
Yeah, because the young man tries
impenetrable
to...
fortresses are not always impenetrable.
Well, they don't exist, right. Is what she says. Right. Because the I don't know what to call her, the lady of the
lady of the house.
The landlady.
She's like a house mistress, yes, a headmistress or something, but it's not a school, so...
House marm.
She says that...
I have to look that up.
She compares the house to Alcatraz and Fort Knox and says it's impenetrable, but of course...
Yes.
Of course, Agent Carter knows that that's not true.
Which gives her an idea to go and investigate Howard Stark's castle.
Right.
Fortress.
Right.
Impenetrable fortress.
But that trip to visit Jarvis, to visit the fort, the where the secrets were stolen from, or the weapons were stolen from, leads Jarvis to be taken down to the police station to protect Agent Carter because she's right inside the door when SSR shows up at the door. So he goes to the station to be questioned in order to protect her.
And the reason they're pulling him in is because they identified
the bumper
and the license plate as belonging to Howard Stark's, fleet master. And they show up and they go, we want to talk to you about this car. He's like, oh, yes, I filed a police report and it was stolen. And did you find it? Yes. Well, lovely. And
that, you sound just like him.
I'm not cute.
No, you're not.
No, I'm not. I'm not cute at all.
No, I am not a cutie.
Yeah, so
you're just not Jarvis cute. Look at you.
He goes down for questioning, and I think he held his own pretty well.
He was pretty cool. Yeah, he kept his cool until they started bringing in.
They threatened him with
his
deportation.
Wife. Well, and they threatened his wife. Yeah. And I don't think they knew the backstory of his wife at all. I don't.
No.
I think they
I like
just
that setup
that
too
out.
With why he was getting so upset, and then we did actually get a payoff of it.
Yeah.
Later.
Within.
I like that episode. We weren't held in this whole why is that such a huge trigger for him?
Yeah.
Not that it shouldn't be, but I like that.
Right. Yeah. So, Agent Carter manages to help Jarvis get out of the police station by accidentally picking up the stolen police report.
What, Marie?
The stolen car report.
I'm just curious. Like, I was confused during that part. Like, why did her bringing up the car report
because
get him out?
Because they weren't supposed to have it.
They said it was lost.
Really, they shouldn't have had it anyway because the police report was filed with the New York police.
Not with
the SSR. So SSR would not have any reason to have it in the first place. And the fact that it was, quote-unquote, lost in the system allowed them to hold Jarvis and ask him all sorts of questions. And when Carter reveals that they had this police report, pretending that she has no idea what it's for, nudge, mm-hmm. nudge, wink, wink, then it blows their ability to hold him for no reason whatsoever.
Okay, I remember like seeing that. I was like, why did that ruin everything? I don't understand.
Yeah, it did work a little too smoothly though to me, because if they were being deceptive and not revealing that they had that police report, I didn't quite buy that he would just be able to walk out that quickly and easily. That
well, they did say at one point that there was a concern. They needed to get as much information from them as they could before he lawyered up, and you know the right. whole army of lawyers descended down right. on everything. So they were under the gun to have, because they knew they weren't going to be able to hold him for very long, no matter what.
They were just trying to get as much information on Stark yeah. as yeah. they could,
and that
by whatever means.
And that leads right. to Tim's observation, and we can get into that after the break on analysis part about just how incompetent these people are. Mm. And mm-hmm. and the process and their investigative skills
or lack thereof.
I think he just gave away Tim's lead.
Mm-hmm. I'm setting it up.
Well, and
because
he's just sitting there and well, looking very smug and
well,
it's just elite and
smug and elite
like a cat.
Well, there we go. This
Watch
is true. I am both smug and elite. This is true. I have my coffee. You can all stuff it.
That's going in a promo.
There we go. Well, as like Maya said, that you know the whole report thing, and this is a little bit of analysis, but I'm sorry. This was the worst sleight of hand in the history of sleight of hand
that she did.
She comes up yeah. and puts her things down, and the file. Okay,
and then pushes
the file right in front of you. The file that is by your hand,
mm-hmm.
the file that you could just kind of twitch your fingers over about an inch and touch.
Suddenly
is gone,
yeah.
and you don't notice. Right,
he was yes. preoccupied.
But he had just been holding it and showing them and boasting about having that police report yeah. right there.
And
lays
I have,
it down, and then she has yeah. to make this move to slide it underneath the stack of papers that she had him sign.
She put her papers on top of it.
And
mostly,
then she slid
it
yeah.
underneath.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that was for us to see what she was doing, but it was still really obvious.
That wasn't the hand of Agent Carter. That was the hand of the writer.
Yes. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Nice. There were a few of those moments.
Oh God,
tonight.
There's a lot of hand of the writer tonight.
Yeah. yeah.
And it's not doing a good service to a character that we like, honestly.
Yeah, right. It was kind of a forced episode for me.
So,
a little bit.
But I've gotten lost on the plot now. So help me get back on the
Jarvis,
plot. So
Jarvis gets out. Jarvis gets out. Carter.
And he's cute.
Carter
Don't
gets
forget.
Back to the yes.
Yes.
Okay.
And he
cutie,
gets...
cutie Jarvis goes back to the mansion. And,
sounds much better when Jason says.
I don't know. I still like 00 Jarvis.
But, hashtag no. cutie Jarvis. We're gonna get that trending.
Okay. Right. Yeah. There you go. All right. So he back to the house, and
Agent Carter shows up again. This time in
after blowing
attire.
After blowing off her friend.
Yes. And the
major
new,
plot point there.
A new young lady has moved in who is an incredibly tall ballerina.
Yeah, she's not a ballerina. There's no way. Ballerina
she's a plant.
She's an Amazon woman.
I tweeted instantly that there was something suspicious about
yeah.
Dottie. And
she
I got
is, yeah,
like,
she's about a foot too tall.
A foot too tall and too broad and too, I mean, she's ginormous for a ballerina. There is no way. Anyway.
And how many people know a ballerina from Iowa? Come on.
My family,
I don't know any ballerinas from Iowa.
Okay, Tim is raising his hand.
Actually, I know a couple of people who live in Iowa,
Iowa,
but yeah.
So. I'm not saying Iowa's a bad place. I grew up very close to it.
She's never met anybody from England before.
I don't know
before.
Any ballerinas from there.
they grow them there, too. Just not that tall, because ballerinas don't come that tall.
No, they don't.
They don't grow that there. They grow corn. That's all they grow in Iowa is corn.
Yes, that's all they grow in Iowa.
Is a ballerina as high as an elephant's eye? Is that what it is?
Yes, that's
yes, exactly.
It's the variant. It's the lesser known version of the song.
But even with her maize colored hair, she was not corn.
No. Okay, so back to the plot.
I was going to digress.
But we digress.
I'm not done digressing. Is it Iwegian or Iowanian? Tim, you're the local Iowa expert.
Iowan. I think it's
Iowan.
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 Like that sounds like a character out of Lord of the Rings.
Iowite.
Well. Should I even mention?
I don't even know.
my son came up with this idea of doing a fan film.
Yeah.
You know, because we'd gone down to Starbase Studios and we're on the bridge of the Enterprise, and he came up with this idea that we would do this story and our bad guys would be named the Ionians. After Iowa 9. I was like, yeah, not sure
just
we are.
A little
do
too
that.
Deliberate there.
Yeah, yeah, so, yeah, we can't take pot shots of the competition quite yet.
Or maybe
it's
not
coming.
Quite that direct.
It needs to ricochet off of something first.
Yeah.
Not that direct.
Right. But that's coming. But anyway, okay, so
Connie did not look Iowish.
So Ballerina comes in, Carter goes out. She goes back to the mansion and
they
dressed appropriately.
Dressed appropriately.
Yes.
And now Jarvis shows her the ginormous hole in the floor.
Yep.
And
that goes
course,
down to the sewers.
Sewer line, yeah. Mm-hmm. To the sewers, that's and they follow that out.
Where Charles Stark's apparently incompetent investigators failed to grasp the fact that water flows.
You mean Howard Stark.
Hey,
why'd you say Charles Stark?
One of those Stark people. one of those Stark people who apparently can't hire anybody who knows understands that
this,
water
this
flows.
This would be brother. Howard's
Charles
older,
brother.
Smarter brother.
That's right. Who would have hired better investigators?
So we got the Starks and the Lannisters. Oh wait. wrong thing here.
There's the mashup that we need.
Well, now think about it though. What's our bad guy's name? Nate Lannis.
Oh.
It's close.
Yeah, well,
it's close. Leviathan are the Lannisters.
Yeah, that's true.
Right. Okay. So, and I thought it is interesting that that nobody figures this out. That Carter's the only one that's
It was raining that night.
It was raining. There's water. He's got a boat. And look, there's a boat.
And
with
not
the
only
broken
that,
heart logo on it.
Yeah, it has the same symbol on it. That was too convenient.
But see, here's my question: Why would Lannis? And I know Lannis is acting on his own, we think. But why would Lannis send her to the boat to retrieve Stark's stuff? Why would Stark's stuff still be on the boat, sitting in the harbor in New York? And two, why would he send her there?
You think it was a trap?
I think it was Hand of the Rider.
But for what purpose?
To get Stark's stuff back.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we talk about waiting until after the break to do the analysis, but the thing is that by talking about this episode, we keep running into the same thing, that it's a very Hand of the Rider episode.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much a, this has to happen so this can happen, so we're just going to make sure that this happens in a way that moves point A to point B.
Oh, and we're going to beat you over the head with it so that we make sure you don't miss it.
Yeah.
Well, and the other point is that once we retrieved all of Howard Stark's stuff, got it on the trucks and everything, we've got the guy who attacks Carter, who's the guy who's sitting on the boat,
right,
waiting for whoever to show up.
Right.
You know, why he wouldn't have been doing something besides sitting on the boat is beyond me. But
well, where
again,
was he?
He
was on
where
the boat.
Where was he before?
He'd wandered away from the boat, apparently. The strangely large on the inside boat.
Yes. much bigger on the inside.
It seemed like, I'm pretty sure, I have to go back and watch, but it looked really very much like they're like, okay, let's.
It did look pretty spacious.
People don't really care how big a boat is, right?
Right.
Wasn't there a Monty Python sketch along those lines?
Well, and you know, you've got a certain amount of space that carries in under the water line, but it did look much bigger.
We're talking about
the
hole.
I mean,
the
hole. Yeah. I agree. I think it was much bigger on the inside.
Well, I mean, and the hold itself. I mean,
it didn't even look like it was the shape of the boat.
If you walk into it, well, that's just it. If that's your hold,
like
then the structure of the boat is outside that.
Yeah.
Which means the boat's now even bigger.
Yes.
So it's just,
it was a forced perspective shot.
Yes. They forced it. They forced that perspective.
But we've got after we got that, and then he's in custody.
So one of the questions I had was, and I'm assuming now after having watched it, that there was a guy standing. I thought he was standing on the boat when Jarvis and Carter come up, and we saw him, and he had a fedora on, and he had the trench coat. Mm-hmm. And that's the same guy that then was watching all the police and then kills the guy later.
The idiot guy.
Yeah.
Kaczminski? Is that his name?
Something like that. Ray.
Yeah. Yeah. Ray. And our guy who has his broken arm now from the Mm-hmm. Constrictor, is that what they called it?
Yeah, the constrictor. Yeah,
the constrictor.
Constrictor.
Chekhov's constrictor.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes. What does this do? Well, I'll show you here in just a little bit.
Yeah.
We'll put it back.
That wasn't foreshadowing at all.
No.
And I don't know. Basically, anytime you open up a container
and
it's full
glowing.
Of something that's glowing,
yeah.
Back away. All right?
Well, and this is the second week in a row that we've had a glowing object in a box.
Yep. Yeah.
Ah, but it's a different color.
Yeah,
still. You know, and lighting too.
Turn, you know, here's Howard Stark's problem.
But this is not the show for the emotional spectrum. That's DC.
He doesn't take the batteries out of his stuff.
Oh, I know.
You know, he just leaves this stuff on. It's like it's a wonder he hasn't burned the mansion down because he left the iron on because the iron basically, is the death ray that moved to Nevada.
Yeah,
they've got perpetual power sources.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, some of them
I thought it was a crate full of watches with radium dials.
Those would be really bright dials.
And add up to a fair amount of cancer.
So,
as you said before, back away from.
So the other guy was dead anyway, no matter what.
Oh yeah, pretty much. Well, you know, running around with a shirt on anyway. I mean, everyone else seems like it's a little cool.
Stella.
Yeah, he would catch his death of cold. Yes. So, Ray's dead. And
so is the broken arm dude.
So is broken arm guy.
I was half expecting, by the way, the pull up to the, because you could hear the train.
Yeah.
You could see the,
I
was expecting the train.
Force him in, yeah.
And actually, I was rather pleased that they didn't, because that would have been a little too obvious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it also would have been expensive.
True.
It would have broken the special effects budget for this week, I think. Because they used it all, though,
that they were stopped by that, by something just like that, and right as he's, of course, discovering the big secret.
Well, we never did see the train or hear it, did we?
We heard it.
Yeah. We heard it.
Okay. But we didn't see it.
Okay. We could have just pushed the car out of frame and heard a boom.
Yeah, that wouldn't have been a very good payoff, though. But I think it's interesting that Ray's the one that was about to learn that Carter was on the boat.
Right.
And now he's dead.
Yeah,
he just figured it out at that most inopportune time.
Yep.
To have a train.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird that the idiot is the first one to figure it out.
Well, I don't think he figured it out. He had
help. Was about to.
But he was told. Not surprising that he's the first one to
when
die.
Somebody says English dame with a good right hook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to put two and two together.
Although he probably hasn't fought her, so he may not know about the solid right hook.
Yeah, but apparently she is the only English woman in
New York. Yeah.
So
only one. Well, and given that, you know, you're on the boat with a bunch of Stark equipment, it kind of narrows it down a little bit, maybe. Yeah. Maybe.
Just a hair. Yeah, so very.
He may be dumb, but he's not stupid.
Well, somebody pointed out he was both. And this is completely off. But the girl, the waitress, because Carter comes into the diner after blowing off the friend.
He skipped right to the end of the show.
He did.
Well, we're close to the end, right?
I mean,
Ray's dead.
Angie.
Yeah. So she goes into the automat and sees Angie and
not an automat. It's a diner.
It says automat on the sign.
It's a diner.
It's a combo of the two, actually, because we actually saw them use part of the automat in the previous episodes.
Yeah.
It's dual purpose.
So
very efficient.
She goes into the bar and sits on the stool. And Angie's there, and so they're commiserating. Oh, we had a terrible day. Is there still some of that schnapps and rhubarb? And
which just sounds awful,
doesn't it?
I know.
Well, there was a challenge there. Let's see which one makes us sick first.
Yeah,
yeah.
There's always a good
together.
Plan.
It's an equal opportunity.
Let's go. You know.
Let's just but where was I going with that?
I don't know.
Angie.
Somebody calls her English.
No, somebody pointed out. I do like that. Mm-hmm, I think that's a nice little affectation for the character. But somebody pointed out last week and asked the question: doesn't Angie look like? Kind of, sort of, the blonde on the boat with Howard in that one photograph. And I thought, it's a rather interesting thing. Could there be more to Angie than we suspect?
Well, considering Angie has actually shown up in some of the photos for the series, you got the little promotional photos.
Right.
And she's actually shown up in photos by herself. It'd be very interesting to see if they don't do anything with her beyond what we're seeing of her.
Yeah.
There's something to be said for having a character that is the only, just what she appears to be.
Mm-hmm. She's going to be the next Captain Marvel.
Well, of course she will.
Or she's Wash.
No.
Was Ray Wash?
I thought she was.
No,
he wasn't.
Because he was.
Sousa would be Wash.
Let's all be honest here. We really didn't care.
No.
I kind of like Ray just because he's
the bing bubbly idiot.
He's the Bullock. He's Harvey Bullock for this show, and now he's gone.
Yeah, actually, he's Harvey Bullock without the charm.
Yeah.
Which.
That's not
says something
very...
actually. and I think we can definitely talk about it in the second half. He's the epitome of what is wrong with the SSR.
Yeah. And we will talk about that since we're right there. We'll talk about it next. Right after this break when Level 117 continues. Stand by.
You're listening to Sci-Fi for Me Radio. Until you unsubscribe in a sudden but inevitable betrayal.
All right, you all listening to Level 117. You are no doubt true believers of some stripe, as are we. And some of you are probably even fans of the Distinguished Competition. So, now that the first wave of DC Comics television shows are on the air, it's time to talk about them. Our new DC TV podcast, we call it The Rogues Gallery. And you can hear that same place you hear everything else, right here on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Hi, folks. My name is Timothy Hardy, and I am one of the co-hosts of H2O, the weekly show about everything genre that I host with Mr. Jason Hunt. And we talk about pretty much anything you need to hear about, or want to hear about, or didn't know you needed to hear about, in the world of sci-fi, fantasy, horror, science fiction, all these great things that we cover every week. And it is just an opportunity for you to tune in and listen to some really, really fun stuff. H2O, scififorme.com. We'd love to have you listen.
And now, back to Level 117, the only 100% Hydra-free podcast on the internet. Hail Hydra.
Back on Level 117, and we've got a full house tonight. Heather French joining us from Dallas, Texas. And Marie Lim from way far away. Out there somewhere, here in the studio.
You never know where she is.
Yeah, well,
she's
on a.
I'm actually in the TARDIS, so it'd be kind of hard to tell you exactly where.
She's on a secret.
It's better to
mission.
Tell you when.
Yeah, here in the studio, Cami Settle is here. Hello. Maya Aids is here.
Howdy.
Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
Dan Handley.
Hello.
And we are going to talk about just how badly the SSR does their job.
Wait, what?
And go, Tim.
Oh, good God! These people are terrible. And this is just the really sad thing is that we all were really, really excited about this show. It's Agent Carter. We
especially after seeing the short.
Yeah, and and unfortunately, what we're getting here, and this is really bothering me, that we get Carter being a field agent. She is doing a perfectly fine job being a field agent. Everyone around her apparently is an idiot. And it's just, it's really grating. It's you're watching these, I mean, they're either corrupt, incompetent, or just all around
bumbling.
Yeah, it's like they're half.
It's like the Keystone Cops sort of thing, yeah.
They're like the Keystone Cops with cudgels. It's just
carrot and a stick.
Yeah, well, the carrot and the stick bit was kind of cool.
Funny.
Yeah,
But this, especially this episode, they're threatening Jarvis with deportation. They're lying to him. They have the file. I mean, I'm very aware that historically, the 1940s, the 1950s, we see it now in the news. Police departments have not always been the most ethically run organizations.
Yep.
The SSR is not a police organization. It is an intelligence organization. I know all this. However, they're just terrible at their job. It's like they've all fixated on Stark. He's guilty. They've all decided. They've got no evidence that he's guilty.
That's the filter that everything goes through.
And
they get their blinders on, yeah.
And but none of them are actually, they have stumbled across every break in the case.
Right.
It's just, the only person who's actually out there doing something resembling
investigative work
is Carter.
Yeah.
Which is great. That's fantastic. She's the star of the show. Good for her. We want that, actually. But it would be, but when you are contrasting her with people who are apparently incapable of, I don't know, functioning in anything resembling an investigative manner, mm-hmm. it's really, really annoying.
Can you imagine irritating this must be for her?
Well, they make it very, very obvious through the writing of the show and the direction of the show how irritating it is for her.
Right.
Well, at this point, she would be...
Go ahead, Heather.
Yeah.
I was going to say, on that particular comment, I think that, again, maybe we're seeing it through her eyes again. Just like last week we were talking about how everything seems so chauvinistic. Maybe it was seeing it through her eyes. Maybe we're also seeing this through her eyes as well. And I actually kind of want to pose to you, Tim, on this. Do you think maybe this is also kind of trying to set to some of the stereotypes we even have about 1940s films and how things were run and how the shows were then and movies?
Well,
and how cops
certainly if you look at the 1940s, you're especially telling it through the private detective standpoint, you often have the corrupt cops, you have the cops as thugs, the noble PI versus the thuggish police department. But you also had the whole subset of the government agent films, because there were a lot of those too. There were films about the FBI. There were films about, the intelligence services from the war. You got all that stuff. And yes, there was a certain amount of propaganda built in to that sort of thing. And it was post-war movies anyway. So, mm-hmm. There's a certain amount of rah-rah America, which is, and there's nothing wrong with that. So you had that. So they were generally painted pretty, pretty much as the heroes. So it's a kind of an awkward. It is kind of an awkward melding of the two. My problem with the idea of us seeing it through her point of view is that this is not the show isn't structured that way. The show is not structured
from just her
point of view.
That's true. We've seen a lot of things she couldn't have seen.
I think if she was the narrator, then we could actually go with the unreal. We could actually end up with a filter mm-hmm. through her, but we're not getting that. We are the outside observer watching, so we're not getting her perspective.
Right.
First
person.
This is the world she's operating in.
Hannah Shaw Williams, writing over at Screen Rant mm-hmm. last week, she made the comparison between Agent Carter and Dead Like Me, which also had a female lead. You have the right. character of George. She's become right. a Grim Reaper. And they're talking about the fact that in Dead Like Me, they never made any big deal about the fact that she was female. Granted, it's a completely different time period. It's not the 1940s, right. so there right. is that. But in this article, it says, the problem with setting Agent Carter up as the show which will prove to Marvel that female characters are bankable is the logical extension that if it fails, it will somehow prove that female characters are not bankable. She's saying you can't put all your eggs in one basket. If Agent Carter doesn't work, they could sit there and say, oh, well, nobody wants to see it.
Right.
This forced defensive stance has already had a negative effect on the show's writing. The feminist moments, and she puts feminist in quotes, the feminist moments of Agent Carter's premiere were a little more subtle and nuanced than the sexist radio plays that the audience is encouraged to laugh at. An abusive customer smacks Angie, and Peggy calmly threatens to stab him with a fork. The desperate need to have Peggy constantly battling sexist adversity also has the rather ironic side effect of creating an overwhelmingly male cast. There was only one female supporting cast member who made it to the end of the premiere, and the rest of the premiere was about Peggy battling her sexist male colleagues, having low-grade sexual tension with her sympathetic male colleague, and working for a guy who assigns another guy to help Peggy track down a ring of baddies, all of whom are men. Now, ostensibly, there's nothing wrong with calling a show with a female lead some kind of triumph for feminism until you reflect back on just how low a bar that sets. It's effectively handing Agent Carter a big gold participation award instead of waiting for something worthy of applause. Basically, she's made the point that we've talked about is, do you make Agent Carter smart by dumbing down the rest of the rest of the cast. Right. And I think we're in that danger zone of going there because we have so many Hand of the Rider moments tonight. And like Tim says, all of the investigative process, these guys, they're Keystone Cops. They're stumbling onto everything.
The fact that this is a secret agency should mean that these are the cream of the crop. These are the guys who made it through and earned that position.
And the ironic thing is the person who wrote the script, Andy Bushel, has a long list on Chicago Fire, The Mentalist, Criminal Minds, Alias, Crossing Jordan, all procedurals.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, these are the, you know,
I like those.
These are not these are not shows that are simple construction point A to point B, and yet Agent Carter is flowing that way now, and I think it's in danger of running off the rails if it keeps going this way.
This was not the
episode. Something that's different between the shows that you just mentioned and Agent Carter. Those are shows that had full seasons. Agent Carter has 8 episodes, I'm wondering if, just like Alex and I talk about in Gotham sometimes about the pacing, and especially since they've added episodes on to that, how that's affecting the pacing and how it's the first 8 episodes really seemed like they were rushing certain plot points and taking liberties with some really, we talk about Penguin going a step forward and then 3 steps back. And maybe it's that same thing with the fact that Agent Carter's got 8 episodes to do what these other shows had 13. 16, 18, 20, 22. So
I don't get any kind of a sense of the pacing being off so much as the characterization being off.
Well, not the pacing of the episode, but the thought process in the writing where we have to rush to get there so they don't write as smart. I'm seeing more of that than I'm seeing.
I think you've got a point there, and I think that you take that and you combine it with the fact that in many ways they're doing, I think we get this a lot in storytelling period. You have archetypes. Okay. You've got, you know, this is the hero on the quest. You've got the wise old teacher. You've got the damsel in distress. You've got the blah, 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 you know, fill in the blank. Right.
Right.
We're getting cultural shorthand here to some degree. And unfortunately, they're kind of beating us over the head with it, which is
And it's very two-dimensional in the fact that you've got basically two archetypes. You have the downtrodden feminist hero who is smarter than everybody thinks she is, and then you've got the dumb guys who think that the woman is dumb. And those are the two archetypes that are in this story right now, what I'm seeing.
Well, and what's disappointing, I think, is that, I mean, I'm not going to for a second argue that there was not exactly this kind of behavior being exhibited by a lot of men coming back from the war, you know, during that time period. You know, this is a thing that happened. Okay, we're not, you know, but at the same time, these are the folks who came back from the intelligence. This is the intelligence community from World War II. These are the folks who came back. The Strategic Scientific Reserve was set up to be, you know, an intelligence agency
to fight Hydra,
to fight the leftovers of the Nazis, to have all this thing.
Yeah.
And it seems to be, with the exception of one guy, filled with people who are oblivious to the resources around them and ignoring the fact that, I mean, the chief of this department should have Carter's file.
Mm-hmm.
He should be looking at Carter's file and going, "Well, I've got this resource here."
Yeah. Well, it's like what it was like last week when Jarvis says, "I've read your war record." Of course, he's got access to it through Stark, but of course her boss is going to have that.
Right.
Is going to know what kind
and
of experience
sure, and
that
yet
she's got.
His question tonight was, "How did I ever get saddled with you?"
Yeah. Right. Well, and the assumption is that she rode Captain America's coattails maybe, and she didn't really do anything except be his girlfriend. I mean, that's just such a stupid starting point.
The problem is, you know,
that's what I was saying last podcast was that no, don't have her be Captain America's sidekick. Have her be her own person. That is exactly what I was saying.
Right.
One of the problems I have is that, like you were talking about, that this sort of sexism would have gone on because of men coming back from the war and everything, but I wouldn't expect it to this degree in this kind of a work situation.
Well,
this
right.
isn't manufacturing. This isn't, you know, someplace where you would expect this. These were people that were working alongside men and women in the information gathering business.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same kind of industry or
right.
business
well,
that
and
you'd
I think,
expect that kind of stuff to be going on.
And I think that goes back to a hand of the writer element where, and I don't want to get political with this, but I'm going to get political with this. Hollywood left. You're going to, you know, this is now a chance to do one for feminism and let's make the guys stupid. And I think that whether consciously or not, I think that's playing into some of this because, like you were saying, they're beating us over the head
well,
with
see,
this.
I think, I don't,
and it's
see, I don't,
unnecessary
I don't think,
to go this
I don't. I don't see the politics. What I'm seeing here is really sloppy writing.
Yeah
but I think it's exaggerated, though, because of I don't know.
I'm sorry, Dan. I can't see you. Go ahead.
Well, I'm not seeing a whole necessarily feminism thing. What I'm seeing is, all right, they're wanting to bring out Agent Carter, but instead of, you know, making her, it's bad writing because it's instead of making her look so much smarter, they dump everybody else down to make her look better. And it's not, I don't think it's as much the feminism as it, she's the main protagonist.
Well,
they have to make her look good, and they're not good enough. They're not writing it well enough to do that.
I think there's outside, I don't want to say outside media pressure, but there is the expectation because this is the first female lead Marvel show. And all of the media coverage has been feminist icon. This is a triumph for feminism and all this other. The coverage has been couched in the feminist filter, and I think that's a mistake because we're not looking at Agent Carter as a superhero lead for the show. We're looking at her as, you know, the woman, and I think it's a sexist perspective to look at it that way. I think we should just look at her as the lead character and what circumstances is she dealing with, and that's not what the writers are giving us.
Well, I would agree that there's a certain amount of feminism going on pushing her as the lead, but I think the dumbing down the other characters was just a cheap way of making her looking superior to them, and that's it.
I'm saying it does a disservice to that character
to do it
that way.
Well, it does, but
not
I don't
just
think
the
that
character, but the whole show.
I don't think that you seem to be insinuating that the writing is based on that motivation. I think the writing is just the writing.
No, I don't think it's based on it. I think that's somewhere back somewhere. I think it's a subconscious thing.
I don't think so. I honestly think that one of the things they need to look at is why they're writing this and who they're writing this for. Something when I worked in books all the time, I would tell people I didn't read adult fiction because adult fiction authors a lot of times don't write really well. But I went over to young adult and young reader because you can't just go from point A to point J without reasoning in a kid's book because they're not going to buy it. You actually have to step it out. And a lot of adult books I would see, by the third page, we've made all sorts of leaps and bounds and assumptions. And, hey, I want to get here, so I'm just going to go ahead and do this. I think Tim said earlier the shorthand. Mm-hmm. That's more what it feels like to me, is it feels like people already know what we're trying to do, so we'll just do this. Whereas if they were writing, like, you know, people always talk about Doctor Who being a kid's show. Well, yeah, it is, but it isn't. And they're trying to write smarter because kids don't put up with the same holes that a lot of us do.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
And that's what I feel. I don't think they have their audience because it's like, okay, we have a female lead, but this, it's a superhero show, but it's not a superhero show, but it's based on this. And we have all these Marvel movies and we're building this franchise. I don't think they've remembered who their audience is and how they need to write for that audience. And then you pick up other people, you know, besides that, woohoo, icing on the cake.
right now, to me, it just seems like it's I really hope there's a good payoff at the end, maybe leading into the second half of S.H.I.E.L.D. Because right now, it really looks like just a filler show. It's like, oh, we've got this Agent Carter character. We might as well utilize this.
Yeah, because so far there's no connection
That's
whatsoever to Agents
really
of S.H.I.E.L.D.
disappointing if they just use it as a filler for S.H.I.E.L.D. because I don't watch S.H.I.E.L.D. So,
well,
what good is this going to do me?
Well, see, and that goes right back to Hannah's article where she's talking about, I really hope that they're not looking at this saying, if this show fails, then we don't need to do any female lead characters anymore. Right. If this is the proof of concept show, mm-hmm. and it's a standalone, and it's there's no connection to anything outside of Captain America, yeah. which we got again tonight, mm-hmm. then... If it doesn't do well, and so far the ratings have been okay, but it's only one week so far. We don't know what the numbers are going to be long, mm-hmm. over the course of the mm-hmm. of the 6 or 7 weeks or however long it's going to be on.
Right.
And it's not going to be on next week. So the ratings numbers are going to be very important in deciding whether or not to move forward, not only with Agent Carter as a show, but with the female lead concept. And I think that's a mistake.
There are some things that they're doing nicely with this show.
I like Jarvis.
I like Jarvis.
Production design's great.
I like Jarvis. Yeah.
Production design is really great.
It is.
Wardrobe, costume.
Yeah, the only problem I have with the production design and the period stuff is that nobody's smoking.
Yeah, that is odd.
And it's 1946 in America, and there should be clouds of smoke in the SSR office.
And at the diner, and on the street,
and on the boat with
Disney.
The glowing things, and
doesn't matter.
That's an excuse, writing inaccurately.
Yeah, it's. I mean, you know, not to say that everybody smoked in the 1940s, but
they did.
A significant chunk of the populace did.
Yeah.
So
that is very true. But
children,
I mean, you know,
children under 10 were discouraged from smoking.
Well, that's true. Yeah, I don't believe there are any laws of them actually not being able to buy the cigarettes.
No,
though.
I don't think so, but I think parents just kind of discouraged them before they were
oh, sure.
Under, well, under 10. Doctors smoked, and they even talked about mm-hmm. the health benefits of smoking.
Yeah, well, and I think, too, that if you're going...
Yes, because this show prides itself on the historical accuracy of comics of superheroes and Hydra and Captain America.
But I think if you're going to do a period piece... And it could be a comic book show, it could be a detective show, it could be film noir, it could be historical drama or whatever. Commit to it 100%. You know, give us the whole kit and caboodle. If you're going to do a period, then be accurate to the period. And mm-hmm. and you know, that's smoking and all. So, you know.
So what is this is 5-6 out of 7 podcasters are all for smoking on Agent Carter? I don't care. It didn't bother me one bit, the lack of it.
Well, it stands out to me because I do watch a lot of films set in the 40s. I'm a big film noir fan.
So am I. I'm a huge film noir fan, and I see where you're coming from. I just don't think, I'm not looking at it like a Mad Men.
Well,
that was part of their whole culture and all this. It's to me, it's a golly gee Twilliker's Captain America selling war bonds and you know, following along in that kind of thing. So
they didn't.
I'm just saying it's not bothering me if they want
to
go for 100% historical accuracy.
Well, but I think that
if they're going for a Disney Marvel primetime show to hopefully get kids and adults and families, and that doesn't bother.
Well, yeah, no, and that's perfectly fine. I think, you know, there's a certain percentage of the audience who's not going to notice at all.
Or care.
Yeah.
But at the same time, maybe that's the problem with the show, is that its tone is completely inconsistent.
Okay, speaking of inconsistent.
One of the problems for the show.
No, I think that's probably the ultimate. At the end of the day, that's the ultimate problem with the show, is that the tone is inconsistent. It can't decide if it's going to be a post-World War II spy show.
Mm-hmm.
It can't decide if it's going to be a gee whiz Captain America war bonds kind of, you know, rah-rah,
right.
You know, superhero kind of show. Because there are no superheroes in this show.
No.
Captain America's dead. And even he's technically not a superhero because they didn't have any. But it can't decide what it is. I mean, you've got characters who are straight out of central casting. You know, very cliched. It's a very curious show with a strange tone.
Maya,
and here's our fallback on something I kind of mentioned earlier, in that
we have 8 episodes for Agent Carter, and I feel the same way about the first 8-9 episodes of Gotham, that it couldn't decide its tone, and that the characters weren't flushed out, didn't have the time on there, and that things were not gelling right. But they have 22 episodes. Agent Carter has 8.
Well, and that's something we've also talked about in terms of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Well, the first few episodes of that of the first season, everything was an archetype. All of them were two-dimensional, and you start adding layers. And by and large, there's not a problem with that, because you do have to have a certain amount of shorthand. We've talked about this before, the fact that you do need something that the audience will readily latch onto and identify and recognize. But I don't know. Maya, you had a point.
Well, speaking of inconsistent, I was going to say that after Ray has died and Peggy comes back to work the next morning and everybody's in mourning, and they have the roses on his desk, but then we're to believe that they're actually going to contact the wife and the girlfriend after everybody got to work and.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, there's...
You know, somebody had to know last night, the night before, that he died, because he never made it back to the station with the witness.
Right. Well, it's just, there's a lot of this where it's like these things happen, whether it's the file being picked up off the desk in the most, in the worst sleight of hand.
Ever.
Right? I guess better call the wife.
I'll call the girlfriend.
It's like, okay, come on. These are, this is the kind of, and I'm sorry, this is the kind of call that if you're the chief of a department, if you're the chief of a police organization, you make that call. You make that call well before the flowers show up.
Yeah.
Actually, that's also, oddly enough, the same scene where I finally liked the character. Where he sits there and goes, he comes out and talks about, I'm not going to lose any more of you.
Yeah, Dooley. Okay.
Dooley. He comes out and I'm like, for that long,
yeah.
I was like, okay, now he's acting like I want him to act.
Then he's going to call the wife and you just completely
And then I'm like, oh, you just completely blew it.
Speaking of Chief Dooley, this is something that I noticed tonight, and it bugs me. And I don't know why
something
he's doing
bugs you about this show?
Yeah, well, this is something that is visually distracting to me.
Uh-huh.
And once you see it, you cannot unsee it. So I'm going to warn you now.
The way he wears his hat?
The way he never looks at anyone.
Mm-hmm. Mm, true.
I have gone through, and I have looked, and I was watching tonight. He's either looking at the wall or looking at the floor, mostly looking at the floor. His eyes are always aimed at the floor.
I told you he's hiding
something. He's never looking
at
anybody.
Eye.
I mean, no, his head. I mean, he's not making eye contact.
That's
where he's talking
to his lines are taped there.
Yeah, that worked for Brando, but not for this guy. I mean, come on.
Some people have different fascinations and hobbies. His is flooring,
or shoes.
There we go.
A shoe fetish.
He might have lazy neck.
I noticed that tonight, and I thought, why is he looking at the floor? And then I couldn't stop seeing it. Every time I saw it, he's not looking at a person that he's talking to.
He's shy.
He's the boss. He's the boss. I mean, come on.
Well, you can be shy at a
point. Although, now that you mention that, I can admit, I'll identify with him a little bit, because there are times, being quote-unquote in charge, that I don't feel like I can just come out and say whatever it is I want to say to whoever it is I want to say it. But that's not shy. That's tact.
That's fear of losing your help.
Well, that's part of that too. Yes.
Yeah, but again, different time.
It's tact.
This is very much a different time. This is the time when if you were the boss,
you let everybody know you were the boss.
Yeah, there wasn't a whole lot of arguing with you.
But it bugs me that he's not looking at anybody. And I saw that tonight, and I couldn't unsee it. And I looked at it. And went,
the other thing is, they have a real job. They probably get to collect a paycheck.
Yeah, hey now.
Where's the rim shot?
I will cut your pay in half for that one.
Well, it's interesting is that you mentioned looking down, and I was sitting there watching and realizing that at least two of the actors in the show need to have it explained to them how to wear a fedora. Because Dooley, first of all, is wearing a hat that's like two sizes too big.
Small.
No, it's too big.
Is it too big?
It's way too wide on him. And then, just looking and going, no. No, that's not how you wear a hat. What's wrong with you people?
down to the really deep stuff.
How you wear your hat.
Well, you know what? Look,
fedora etiquette.
Tim, maybe, Tim, maybe you should try and see about getting the technical advisor job on.
Well, you know what? It's very easy to get this stuff wrong. And here's the thing, is that a good chunk of the audience is never going to notice. Okay? They just don't know. And that's fine. I mean, when I make films set in the 40s, there's always a certain point where I sit there and go, no one but me is going to recognize that I'm doing this wrong.
Well, but here's the thing.
Well, and we've actually talked about that when we were working on Randolph Carter.
Yeah, exactly. There's a certain amount of, you know, you have to do a little amount of hand wavy because you can't. You have budget limitations, okay?
Right. Yeah.
And these guys have a much better costume department than we do. Yeah. They have a lot more vintage cars. They have some really good.
All of our stuff fit.
But all of our stuff fit, and you just look at some of this stuff and go, okay, I realize I'm like one of like 10 people watching this show going, that's not how you wear a hat. What's wrong with you? Take that hat off your head. Get over here and let me explain to you how this works. You know, and then, but at the same time, they have these great ties. So it's like, what do you do?
Well, you know, most of that we can forgive. It's the writing for me. I mean, they just phoned it in. And if I had to judge this series on tonight's episode, I wouldn't watch next time.
Well, and I'm just really disappointed because it's actually a good cast.
Yeah, I'm not saying
that the I like the concept.
Yeah,
I like the concept of a woman in the 1940s, post World War II, establishing the fact that her male peers in what is essentially a male-dominated field,
mm-hmm.
Establishing that they're going to respect her for what she knows and what she can do. And you know, there's room in this kind of story for some of what we've gotten, for the illusions that they have, the perception that women are not as capable.
Yeah.
And for her
secretaries,
and how she can make that, you know, proving herself. But it's so heavy-handed. Everything in this show is so heavy-handed, and it's like it all the way down to, you know, oh, we've discovered that water flows down to the ocean.
Yeah,
it's like, but our investigators have discovered this before. Who did you hire?
You can put a boat on the water.
And it goes the opposite
things.
Way. Yes.
Did you hire the Three Stooges? Because I want to see that spinoff. I want to see the Three Stooges doing, you know,
Tony Stark's investigation.
I want to see the Agent Carter crossover with Doctor Who.
Yes.
The
boat?
Yeah, because, you know, the boat's bigger on the inside. And when was it? It was somewhere toward the middle when she says, there's a call box across the street.
Right.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
In a very cultured British accent, she says, there's a call box across the street. And I'm thinking, is it blue? Is it blue? Because call boxes have to be blue. I'm waiting for the Agent Carter Doctor Who crossover.
I also was impressed with how large her room is in the women's house that she's staying in. It mm-hmm. seemed big.
It's a very big
really
apartment.
Big.
Okay. Well,
it's like Friends.
I was going to say,
it was bigger on the inside.
Well, remember, Friends is set in New York too. They've got very, very, very big apartments
for people. Yeah, however much. Well, and here's the thing again. How many people in the audience are going to realize that in the 1940s, rooms as a rule, if you're a lot of that stuff was a bedroom and a bathroom.
Yes.
Were not big.
Even now. Getting a place in New York, you're not going to get a very big place unless you've got a lot of money.
And if you go into an older hotel, it's a bed and a bathroom.
My first apartment in this town was at the Ambassador, which used to be a hotel way back in the day. And you can tell, you can walk into everything and sit there and realize that the studios were very much what a hotel room was like in the 1940s. It was basically a room, a kitchenette.
Yep.
And a bathroom. And I had a one bedroom, which was the room, a slightly larger kitchen, a bathroom, and a bedroom that was kind of just tacked on. So, I mean, it's a cultural thing. It's a history thing that, again, most of the audience isn't going to know.
Mm.
But at the same time, it is kind of like,
I was looking at that and going,
how is she affording this on a phone company salary? I mean, who does anybody buy this?
And it struck me too that when she walked in, again, late to work. Like,
yes.
Like they pointed out, apparently she's the last one to ever get into the office. But she's coming. She's coming down that row of operators, phone company operators,
right. Mm-hmm.
And they're all bawling their eyes out.
Right.
And I'm thinking, wait a minute. Do they all know
yes.
where they're working?
Oh.
Is the phone company not a cover for any of these people?
Oh, I thought they were basically the switchboard for SSR.
No, too. Well, the impression that we got
was... Well, see, the cover is they work for a telephone company.
Yes.
Right? So these people up top...
How many people know
how many of them know that this is a cover?
Right.
And all of them are reacting to Ray's death. I'm thinking, okay, wait a minute. Maybe they all know Ray and his cover as the phone company something, whatever, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But it just struck me because Rose, down at the end, or what's her name? Mm-hmm.
Rose, yeah.
She's the one that knows because she's the one that's got the button that opens up the secret door to go in there. But how many of the others know what's going on?
That's a good question.
They didn't tell him. Well, they didn't say how he died. They just said he died.
Phone company... guys don't always get shot very often, so yeah, they'll take it a little hard.
Well, yeah, but Cammy's got a good point. There's no reason for them to know how he died, just right. that he's yeah. dead. But it was just one of those things that just kind of struck me as mm-hmm. odd. It's a minor little thing that will not keep me up at night, but still.
But you'll spend sure? 10 minutes what? Talking.
Yes, I'm sure.
Well, I won't sleep.
See what you've done?
I don't think that
I'm going to have nightmares.
I pass it along so you guys lose sleep and I can right. just, you know.
You're a
stop
monster.
Stop unloading it on us.
I'm going to be sucking my thumb with a teddy bear.
That's what she said.
Gripping that pillow and
okay.
TMI.
So, where do we go from here?
Well, here's my biggest fear is that this is the rest of the show.
Yeah,
I mean this is
the rest of the episodes.
Yeah, and that would be really, really disappointing because again, we've got a great concept here. We've got a great setup. Next episode, I guess we were getting our clash with Stark.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It just
yeah.
Use your words.
You're leaving
words.
Dead air there. Come
well,
on.
Well, the problem is okay.
And I thought it would be me tonight.
So yeah. our big mystery, of course, was the stolen Stark stuff.
Right. Which is no longer stolen.
Which is no longer stolen.
We but still have Leviathan
out there.
But we didn't get really much anything on that tonight, except they found the magic typewriter.
Well, they found the magic typewriter and got some background information about our two dead Leviathan guys who are already dead. which is, you know, I hate to say this again, it's kind of standard spy stuff. It's like, wait a minute, this guy died years ago. Dun dun dun. Dun.
Yeah. All
right, we've never seen that before.
Ever
in the history of ever.
It was very creative.
It was very creative. So it's just, I mean, it's. I am not. We're gonna watch the show. We're gonna build up to her end because we're building up to
maybe
we're building
not.
Up to the formation of S.H.I.E.L.D. Right?
Yes.
And according to at least one of the Marvel wikis, 1946 was the year that the SSR went away. And S.H.I.E.L.D. began.
This is why.
This is 1946. Yeah, right. Because apparently they're all idiots. But
they can do their jobs.
Like, well, okay, so you know, it actually does work because if we remember in the one shot,
mm-hmm.
you know, Howard Stark is the one who calls Peggy and says, I want you to run S.H.I.E.L.D. Mm-hmm. We're going to set it up. What if all of that is the result of all of this incompetence and assumption that he's guilty. And he says, you know, I'm tired of dealing with all of you. You're just all going to go away, and I'm going to start over from scratch. This thing's going to be S.H.I.E.L.D., and we're going to let her run it.
Okay, well, first of all, he's not in the government. So he doesn't actually get to make these decisions about government agencies, no matter how much money he has. Now, okay, I said that with a straight face, didn't I?
You did, and you made it all the way through.
I know, all the way through, and before I started to laugh. Especially in the 1940s, okay, because we think money buys a lot now in government. Guess what? In the 1940s, if you were a billionaire, it was like, I have my own country.
yeah. Howard Hughes.
Yeah. But at the same time... Who oversees the SSR? Who do these people answer to?
That's a good question.
Answer to Leviathan.
I just, yeah, that guy, there we go. Well, that explains now, so much.
There was,
Leviathan's in charge.
But there
they
was a suggestion. Now, in Captain America the First Avenger, there was a suggestion that it was a military, it was army, because you had General, what's
Leviathan?
His name? No. The SSR.
Oh, sure, but they're spinning it back.
With congressional oversight.
Right.
So
right there, we're screwed on two levels.
Exactly. Yeah. The implication was that it was its own agency, kind of like the CIA, and it doesn't really necessarily answer to another division of government. It's military.
Even the CIA has got.
They answer to Congress.
Well, they answer to Congress, but I mean, there's a checks and balances in their administrative structure.
Right.
Right.
Is Dooley the chief of SSR? Or is he the chief of this division?
Yeah,
that's the question.
That's the question. Because if he's the chief of SSR, then we can get away with the buck stopping up here. If he's the chief of this division. Why isn't his boss going, what the hell is happening in New York? Yeah. What is wrong with these people? Who? You're all fired.
So basically,
Carter, get in here.
So
you're
basically
in charge.
Stark would get rid of SSR, replace it with S.H.I.E.L.D., and get new writers.
Well, here's the other thing. Here's the other thing, too, though, because in the one shot, you had a completely different cast in the office. There was a different guy in charge. There was a different crew. I mean, granted, it was a one shot, and they didn't do anything. But what's his name? Played her boss.
We killed one off tonight.
I know, but what's her name? What's his name? He was in the West Wing, and 60 Rock. He just got casted in Brooklyn 99. What's his name? Don't everybody look it all up at once.
Well, there's only two of you with computers, so.
Hang on.
Oh, you're talking about old man What's-His-Name's son.
No.
Apparently not.
Well, you threw me with the second one. I would have gotten him from West Wing, but I need more.
Hang on.
Hold, please.
Skinny Arms Rob Lowe.
Talk amongst yourselves. Hold for research.
It was.
Recalculating.
We're strolling.
Recalculating.
Bradley Whitford.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
He played her boss in the one shot.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't seen him yet. So,
everybody else gets killed because we were picking them off one by one starting tonight.
Yeah.
We're only gonna keep
Sousa.
Because you know.
Who wasn't in the one shot?
Well, it's because you know he's off doing something else. He becomes Mr. Peggy Carter or something. I don't know. There actually is an article. Was it Entertainment Weekly where they actually the speculation of who Peggy married?
I didn't see it.
Yeah. And so it's like, well, okay, they're considering the possibility of we're seeing her potential husband in the show, and they actually interviewed the actors, and they're like, well, they haven't told us anything. The guy playing Sousa's like, yeah, I mean, I'd be all right with that. Sure, no problem. But they haven't told me.
It means
me
I have a future.
It's probably some guy from Budapest.
Yeah, well.
And how many of us are now waiting for Marvel's Budapest? Right?
Exactly.
I mean, we've had Black Widow and Hawkeye talk about it now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Jarvis, 00 Jarvis, mentions Budapest tonight.
Right.
Or correctly pronounced Budapest.
Yes.
Yes.
And now
Thank
we
you.
Have.
Thank you very much. Yes.
Uh-huh, yes. And so now, I'm wanting to see Marvel's Budapest. Because
well, you know what's going to happen.
It needs to be a thing.
They're going to sit there and they're going to keep dropping it, and then eventually they're going to sit there and go, you know what happens in Budapest stays in Budapest.
Right? I think the Hungarians.
we're not
going to
tell you what it is.
Them out.
It's probably going to be
they
something really anticlimactic.
Yeah,
they have it for the next one, the Blitzkrieg button, where Dooley chases a new clue all the way to Europe that threatens to destroy Peggy's future at the SSR.
Bum, bum, bum.
Wow.
Europe probably means London because they've got the back lot. Oh, wait. That was inside baseball. Sorry.
Yeah. Anybody want to take a guess about who this mysterious man is?
In the fedora?
Yeah.
The one, you know, that's wearing it right?
That's what I was about to say.
The guy who was... See, I thought the guy...
The hitman.
Well, I thought the guy that climbed the drain pipe and everything at the ladies' boarding house, right. I thought that was going to be some creepy, sinister dude, but right. actually he was just a horny young man.
So. Right.
Well, which is potentially a creepy, sinister dude.
unless Alice...
They're wanting you to think that yeah. that's all he was doing there.
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun.
Or unless
although he did have a voice
husband.
Box, so... He's,
he did.
He's, yeah, he
did.
Was able to talk, so...
Which was lucky for him, because otherwise he probably would have been shot.
He is the future husband.
I don't know about that.
Well, no,
that
I don't think so.
I think Hitman is probably just another member of the Leviathan gang that we just haven't seen yet.
But why did he go ahead? I mean, he let Carter and Jarvis go on the boat.
Right.
He saw them. He let them get on there. He let
Which
them
goes back
find.
To why did they?
Well, the,
why did they get the lead?
It's a trap.
Stealing Stark stuff is not the objective.
No, it's a red herring.
Yeah.
Which is
let's make you all Keystone Cops look over here at the Stark stuff while we're over here doing something else.
So it's either a diversion or it's a trap.
It's a diversion.
Well, and also and then, like how Jarvis was saying, you know, she wanted to just turn it in, and he's like, no, you do that, and then right. you're part of this whole thing. So if somebody does find it and turn it in, then there's even more people that are in the know that are off the right, you know, out of the play. So.
Then the other thing I've been wondering about is where did they, what did they do with all of these bad babies that
there is a warehouse in Nevada.
It's with the death ray.
The death ray is in there too,
uh-huh.
along with the Ark.
Uh-huh.
And the magnetized coffin.
Yep.
And all of the doohickeys that Thompson had. And I do want to do a little shout out to Chad Michael Murray because he did reply to us about his doohickeys.
His doohickeys?
Mm-hmm.
His doohickeys. It's a technical term.
Would an obelisk have been there as well?
A doohickey?
Could be. I'm looking at stills from the Agent Carter one shot.
Yes.
Yeah.
And wow, they really did not even consider paying attention to consistency between the one shot and this show. The office looks different. There's a staircase that isn't there. Suits don't fit as well, actually, in the one shot.
Well, they probably didn't have as big a budget to work with.
Well, I'm sure they didn't. The office in the one shot looks cooler than the office we're getting right now. So. Oh, well.
The office that they're in right now is very visually, it's very uninteresting. It's just rows of desks and a... Mm-hmm.
That's probably why they can't get any work done. They're like, it's downgrade.
Boring.
It looks like the inside of that ship.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. It looks like another sound studio. Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, what can you do? Hope for better writing.
Hope for better writing.
Yeah.
So next week, we're not going to get any better writing next week because there's not a show on.
There's no show.
But maybe this one will be better the second time around because they are replaying it. Maybe. Oh.
No,
yeah, that'll make it way better.
No, I don't think that's going to work.
So
more Jarvis. Hashtag cutie Jarvis. Hashtag
Jarvis.
Y'all go ahead and make that a thing.
Cutie Jarvis. Gonna.
Yeah. Okay. okay. So now the question then is.
Here's another question.
Always a question with him.
If it doesn't get better.
Yeah.
What are the implications for the overall show? Because remember, all of the complaints about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it's terrible, it's a crap show, it's terrible, we're the superhero show, and the show's not going to get canceled because we all know what purpose Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. serves. And now it's even more so because it's setting up Inhumans.
Mm-hmm.
If Agent Carter does not perform well ratings-wise... Is it still in the protected status that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. enjoys, or is this an all or nothing, we get these 8 episodes, and if it doesn't do well, it's gone?
You know what? If it gets the 8 episodes and it's gone, it's going to be okay, because it's a historical. Okay? It's not a... It's
Yes, but again, you've got feminist icon filter.
Okay, but hold on. Guess what? Nobody cares. And I don't... I don't care either.
And I'm on the feminist
Just, I mean, and you know why nobody cares? Because the money's in the movies.
True.
Right?
Yeah.
The Black Widow movie is far more important to Marvel's bottom line and to audience ticket sales, which is, I mean, you know, as much as much as I love good writing, as much as I've said again and again and again, the story is the key.
Yeah.
That's not what Hollywood cares about, and that, as much as we love what Marvel's been doing with their movies, that's also not really what they care about. It's money.
Yeah.
And
but the Black Widow movie is not happening yet. We're getting Captain Marvel, but we're not getting Black Widow.
We're going to get Black Widow. You know we are. We're going to get Captain Marvel. We're going to get Black Widow, and that's all they're going to care about because and hopefully what it also does is it gets rid of that stupid idea that you can't have a female lead for a superhero film.
But that goes back to what I'm saying is if Agent Carter doesn't do well in the ratings, does that say anything about a female lead?
I think the writing is so bad that it's not even going to go to that point.
Yeah, but just to Tim's point, they don't care about the writing. It's not about this. It's about the numbers and the money.
In terms of the audience,
there's no way they could blame that.
The people who are watching this show, are fans of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
Which hemorrhaged viewers the first season, and a lot of them did not come back.
Right.
So you're already down from your initial numbers. So there's a subset of that audience is watching the show. You've got a subset of the movie audience watching this show.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have numbers for the first two episodes?
1.93.
Okay, 1.93.
49 demo.
Yeah. They did. I think there were close to 7
6.
Million.
6.9 million.
6.9 million watched the 2-hour cumulative.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so...
Which was higher than some of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. shows.
Sure. So there you got your first thing. Let's really just see what the numbers are for tonight.
Yeah.
Because your fall off from that first two episodes, because we're not the only people who are seeing some of these problems. We're just the ones who are doing podcasts about them.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's the impact is going to come in losing. The biggest impact is that you won't get a second season.
I think what they're going to be looking at is, how does it perform on its own? How does it help the TV branding with S.H.I.E.L.D.? How does it support that? It's not as much of a standalone as it is that support that holds up a lot of the rest of it. And it's not something that you're going to see, you know, like Tim was saying, it's not the big thing that they're hoping for. It's not the moneymaker, because I don't really see a whole line of Agent Carter fedoras for kids out there.
Well, and it's not furthering the stories.
You know, there's not like the marketing aspect that you have with a lot of the other Marvel items. So it's something that, to me, is that support leg that isn't going to have as high expectations, and I don't mean that bad, but because it is more of a supporting for everything else.
And remember, too, Agent Carter is probably going to show up in Age of Ultron in a Scarlet Witch induced flashbacks. We've already seen hints of that, so maybe something ties
she's
in there.
She's there for the historical color.
Yeah.
Also, what I'm kind of seeing here is, as for whether or not it would be one season, it kind of looked to me like it was actually intended for just an 8-episode run. That's it. Maybe they had in mind the possibility that they could go further with it later, but. You know, with the MCU, they've really pushed that everything is connected.
Right.
And being that it just happens to fill the gap of the mid-season gap for S.H.I.E.L.D., it tells me that it's trying to set something up for S.H.I.E.L.D., and that's the point of it.
And ABC has this thing of trying what a friend of mine used to call the donut scheduling.
Yeah.
Where you've got the season, and then there's this hole in the middle that you have to fill. Mm-hmm. And they've tried doing that with other shows, but filling it with a show that maybe has a similar kind of concept, but that has no connection. The fact that they're filling this donut hole with something that does connect to the show that it's filling the place of, that connects with so many other things. ABC trying to find, how do you do this where you don't have the backlash of all the repeats? You know, because that was a big thing that they've had with other shows.
Now I want donuts.
I want donuts. Right. There you go.
And on that,
but how do you fill this time without viewers going, more repeats, more reruns? We just saw, you give me a new episode and then a month of reruns.
Yeah.
Or you give me three episodes and then I have a month of reruns and you lose audience that way. So I think they're trying to find a way that they can make that donut hole work. And even if it doesn't perform spectacularly, if it performs okay, pretty well, and they can tie it into the next season of S.H.I.E.L.D. to do that exact same thing, I think you'd see that again.
Okay.
Or summer or something, I think.
And I'm going to let Heather have the last word on that. And hopefully we won't get a very, very long time between now, because we only got a couple of weeks before we get their next episode back. So it won't be as long a time as what we were dealing with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. last year. So hopefully the audience fall off won't be precipitous and significant. So let's see what happens. Now, if you have a theory or if you have comments or anything about the show or about our show, you can certainly leave them over at scififorme.com, or you can find us on the social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest, Google+, Tumblr, YouTube. I had to look at my cheat sheet for once. I did. Oh.
Gotta work on that memorizing.
I know. Our podcasts are available on iTunes. You can download them there. You could subscribe through the RSS feed, or you can go through a couple of other apps, OneCast, Double Twist, Stitcher. And you could send us an email. Let us know your thoughts on the show, level1187@scififorme.com. And that's going to do it for us tonight. Heather French, Marie Lynn.
Good night.
My aides.
Good night.
Kimmy Settle.
Good night.
Dan Hanley.
Good night.
Tim Harvey.
Good night.
On behalf of all of us here at scififorme.com, it's Jason Hunt. Thanks for joining us. We will be back next week. No.
No.
2 weeks.
Sometime. Two weeks. Unless we decide we're going to do a special. We'll be back sometime. This has been a presentation of scififorme.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. You're listening to Sci-Fi for Me Radio.